Good evening, truth seekers. Mike Molloy here. Welcome to the program. We may have the Ustream video up and running here in just a second. This is, well, a couple of announcements first. Brad Friedman will be sitting in for me tomorrow night. Another event at Molly's school. I wanted to tell you that so that when you tune in tomorrow night and I'm not here, you don't freak out, because I'm going to rip the skin off of somebody again tonight in the third hour. And once you hear it, the way I think it's going to go down, if I'm not here tomorrow night, you're going to go, oh, they got him. They finally got him. No, they're not going to get me. So, yeah, apparently we made the right-wing blog monkeys again, and which I think is wonderful. I just hope the right-wing blog monkeys will just continue to publicize this show. The other thing, we've added a feature for the program here that you can participate in if you are so inclined. All you have to do, just go to MikeMolloy.com, go to the main page, and there's a tab there along the tab bar on the top. That's a tab there that says sponsor. Take a look at it. Go to MikeMolloy.com, go along the tab bar at the top where it says sponsor. Click it. You might be interested in what it says. Because a lot of people have asked me about this, so we decided to go ahead and give it a shot. So check it out. Okay? Brad Friedman tomorrow night. Go to MikeMolloy.com tonight and check out the sponsor tab. That could be a lot of fun. It's pretty cheap, too, just like everything on this program. Very cheap. We're a cheap program. We're very cheap. All right. It is National Furniture Sale Day. They call it Veterans Day, but you know what it means in this country. That's when all the big-name furniture stores come up with millions of dollars worth of television advertising. And leading up to the big day, and then on the big day, lots of sales for furniture. Now, before you call me a cynic, just stop and consider that if these furniture companies were really serious about celebrating Veterans Day, they would close their doors and bring buses up to the front door and ask your employees to get on the buses to go to the nearest veteran cemetery and beg for forgiveness for sending people to die for corporate America yet again. And I say yet again because, you know, this is nothing new. I've quoted General Smedley Butler, United States Marine Corps, a couple of times, and I have a short speech here that he delivered in 1933. He was a two-time Medal of Honor winner, combat vet, went out and did the dirty work for corporate America 80, 90 years ago. Here's what he said. War is just a racket. A racket is best described, I believe, as something that is not what it seems to the majority of people. Only a small inside group knows what it is about. It is conducted for the benefit of the very few at the expense of the masses. I believe in adequate defense at the coastline and nothing else. If a nation comes over here to fight, then we'll fight. The trouble with America is that when the dollar only earns 6% over here, then it gets restless and goes overseas to get 100%. Then the flag follows the dollar, and the soldiers follow the flag. I wouldn't go to war again, as I have done, to protect some lousy investment of the bankers. There are only two things we should fight for. One is the defense of our homes, and the other is the Bill of Rights. War, for any other reason, is simply a racket. There isn't a trick in the racketeering bag that the military gang is blind to. It has its fingermen to point out enemies, its muscle men to destroy enemies, its brain men to plan war preparations, and a big boss supernationalistic capitalism. It may seem odd for me, a military man, to adopt such a comparison. Truthfulness compels me to. I spent 33 years and 4 months in active military service as a member of this country's most agile military force, the Marine Corps. I served in all commissioned ranks from second lieutenant to major general. And during that period, I spent most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, and for the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. I suspected I was just part of a racket at the time, and now I'm sure of it. Like all the members of the military profession, I never had a thought of my own until I left the service. My mental faculties remained in suspended animation while I obeyed the orders of higher-ups. This is typical with everyone in the military service. I helped make Mexico, especially Tampico, safe for American oil interests in 1914. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys to collect revenues in. I helped in the raping of half a dozen Central American republics for the benefit of Wall Street. The record of racketeering is long. I helped purify Nicaragua for the international banking house of Brown Brothers in 1909 to 1912. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for American sugar interests in 1916. In China, I helped to see to it that Standard Oil went its way unmolested. During those years, I had, as the boys in the back room would say, a swell racket. Looking back on it, I feel that I could have given Al Capone a few hints. The best he could do was to operate his racket in three districts. I operated mine on three continents. Marine Corps Major General, two-time Medal of Honor winner, Smedley Butler. War is a racket. It has been for this country since the beginning of this country. And you might even make the claim, and you would not be far off base if you did, that war is always a racket. It really is disturbing to me every Veterans Day. And this holiday is relatively new. This used to be called Armistice Day. When I was a kid, it was still called Armistice Day. The 11th hour of the 11th month, the 11th day, the end of World War I. Which it was not, it was merely a setup for the beginning of World War II. But every time I see the ceremonies on television on Veterans Day, it turns my stomach. I'll bet that all those mothers and fathers and husbands and wives and kids that are sitting there watching these ceremonies would stand up and rip that flag to pieces if they could just have their dad or their mom or their brother or their uncle back. You know what I'm saying? To another time. The eyes of the world now turn. Down there.
Cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
Okay, that was Smedley Butler before the break. If you just do a Google search for Smedley, S-M-E-D-L-E-Y, Butler, some amazing stuff comes up. And he was, for a while, he was a contemporary of Mark Twain's, Samuel Clemens. And as I mentioned on this program numerous times, in his later years, Mark Twain became pretty much, I think Twain pretty much was always an atheist, but he became a very heavy-duty anti-war proponent in the United States, to the point that the usual gangsters and bastards in this country, the grandfathers and great-grandfathers of the gangsters and bastards that run the country today, I mean, you know, this is just passed down, like the Bush family. It just passed down through the generations. But they came to question Mark Twain's loyalty to the country, all sorts of stuff. But Twain covered part of the Spanish-American War in the Philippines, and the stuff that he wrote about it was about as anti-war as you could get. Andy sent me this email. Growing up here in Georgia, I have a family that's almost exclusively Republican. I was one, too, while I was growing up, but fortunately I went to college and started reading and educated myself, and that was the end of that. My grandfather got an education of a different sort. He served with the Marines at Guadalcanal. He did what they asked him to do, and he even rose through the ranks to some extent. But to say he was proud of his participation in the good war would be a lie. He would talk about the overall experience less as he got older, but he became very outspoken in his anger over the current wars we're fighting. He hated how we're, quote, sending our boys over there to die, end quote, but he hated our killing of civilians just as much. And he hated both Bushes with a passion and saw him for what he was, a cocky, overgrown frat boy. I really enjoyed it when he would launch into one of his rants because everyone else in the family could only shut up and listen. No one else had been to war and saw what he did. The fact is, there's too many armchair generals, chicken hawks, in this society. Perhaps if we had a draft in the first decade of this century, we would have a more realistic view of war as my grandfather did. Instead, Bush and Obama have tried to isolate this war from the public as much as possible, employing private contractors, not asking us to sacrifice anything. They just wanted to go destroy a country on our dime and reap the profits. And that's what they managed to do, with a crowd endlessly chanting USA, USA in the background, carefully kept out of the realities of war. Happy Veterans Day, Andy. Well, Andy knows what I'm talking about, and I guess you do too. The incredible cowardice of the leadership in this country, and not just the political leadership, the incredible cowardice to not have the sense to never, under any circumstances, support capitalism with your body, with your blood, with your guts. That should be the prime directive for every person in this country. Don't goddamn ever go die for a monetary system that is predatory, vicious, and unfair. But the cowards that run this country, not just the political cowards, but cowards like Beck, cowards like Limbaugh, cowards like Hannity, every single one of them, a yellow streak a mile wide running up and down their backs, the slimy bastards, they promote the idea of war for someone else to go to, for someone else to go get his arms and legs shot off or half her head shot away. Cowards, filthy, stinking cowards. If we are going to have, if we're going to indulge in mass killing and slaughter, then you miserable bastards that set the policies of this country, put in place a universal draft. Everybody goes or nobody goes. What did Dick Cheney say all those years ago? I had better things to do in the 60s than go join the military. Yeah, you did, you scumsucker. But every single one of you right-wing cowards who talk about your patriotism, you're liars. You're liars. And you don't have the strength God gave a pissant. All of you right-wingers are cowards.
Look at all we've done with a saber and a gun. Tell me, was it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese skies, and I set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw their cities burning, I knew that I was learning, but I ain't marching anymore. Now the labor leader's screaming when they close the missile plants. United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason, call it love or call it...
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
25 before the hour. Tim from L.A. writes in regarding Veterans Day and things military. Rand Paul wants to introduce legislation now to cut spending on the military. Does that mean less weapons of mass destruction to kill women and children and men and grandparents? Or does it mean less toilet paper or meals ready to eat or less VA benefits for the troops? I guess it's safe to assume the latter. Smedley Butler was right in saying war is a racket at the expense of the lives of our veterans. Forget keeping them alive. The Republicans only honor the dead. Yeah, Kathy brought that up the other night. They like dead fetuses. They love dead soldiers. Capitalism, the one thing capitalism wants... when they employ the military, they want the objective, and that is conquering some other economy so that the capitalists can move in and take it. And then they want the soldiers to all die. Because if the soldiers stay alive, then they have to be cared for. You know, the wounded ones, the ones with PTSD, the ones with lifetime emotional problems. And capitalism hates that. You know, capitalism doesn't want the residue of what they're doing to be there, so they have to deal with it. Capitalism only wants dead soldiers. That's all. And then they can, you know, they can fly the flag at half staff and have the vice president put a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown. And, you know, all this other garbage, all this other garbage. But I swear to you, there is not a family out there that's sane, and I don't know how many families are sane anymore, but there's not a family out there that's sane that would not trade anything. All this pomp and circumstance, all the triangular folded flag, all the 21-gun or 5-gun or 3-gun salutes, whatever the hell it is, they would trade it all to have their son or father or brother or sister or mom back. But this is what capitalism does. Smedley Butler said it a hell of a lot better than I can. War is a racket. It's not to defend the United States. When was the last time the United States had to be defended? I mean, literally. Was it the War of 1812? And every one of these phony bastards down through, especially during the Reagan years and up to now. Well, no, we have to go back to... right after Kennedy or Eisenhower, you know, when we decided to go to Southeast Asia and start murdering people and getting our people murdered in return. These wars were never ever, ever. And you're a goddamn fool if you are a Republican, if you believe otherwise. They were never, ever about patriotism. They were never about defending the country or protecting the Constitution. They were always about benefiting capitalism. Period. Eliminating the competition. 50 years of the so-called Cold War. What the hell do you think that was about? Huh? The Russians are coming? Jesus. It just gets me so angry. So angry. Oh, well. Joe in Temecula, California writes, regarding the debt panel, not the death panel, that was made up crap out of the minds of Sarah Palin and the rest of these vicious anti-Americans, but the debt panel, how to solve this national debt that the Republicans have given us. It started with Reagan. Clinton started to turn it around. But Reagan, two terms of Reagan, one term of Bush, two terms of Bush Jr., and now this president is struggling. You goddamn Republicans, you're the ones that did this, and you know you did. So, but play your games. I really don't care. I hope you bankrupt the country. I hope the United States, the citizens, the decent citizens in this country finally realize that you're cockroaches and it's time to step on you. I hope that happens. Joe in Temecula, California writes, Mike, I don't know about you, but I, for one, feel like the media is trying to sell us on the so-called debt panel and convince Americans that we need these austerity measures. I turned on the news this morning only to hear the news anchor and guest talk about how we spent a lot of money and now we must make the necessary sacrifices. They were making it sound like none of us had any choice but to accept these draconian measures. For starters, we did not spend the money. George W. Bush and conservative Republicans did. And before that, it was Reagan. I've yet to hear anyone in the television news media report the history of how we got into this mess. When Bush was appointed president by the Supreme Court in 2000, he entered office in 2001 with a budget surplus. The national debt stood at about $5.5 trillion and was scheduled to be paid off by 2010. Bush proceeded to borrow money in order to cut taxes, which in turn decreased revenue. He also decided to fight two wars on borrowed money. Republicans also passed Medicare Part D, which was not paid for either. The net result is that by the time Bush left office, we were well over $12 trillion in debt. With a $1.3 trillion budget deficit left for the next president. And for all their malfeasance, this debt panel wants to punish us by doing things like cutting Social Security, Medicare, raising the retirement age, getting rid of child tax credits, and mortgage interest deductions. How about slashing the military budget by 50%? Why do we need to have a military presence in 83 countries? See Smedley Butler. Why are we still spending billions of dollars a day on Iraq and Afghanistan? The conservative Republicans broke the government on purpose just so they could force these cuts on us. This is called breaking government, plain and simple. And when it's finally broken, it will be replaced fully by corporatism. Wake up, Americans, smell the napalm. It is morning in America again, only this time the horizon has a red glow to it. Oh, yeah, and they want to get rid of Social Security and Medicare for everyone under 40, but they still want us to keep paying for it? Perhaps Sharon Angle was right, although for the wrong reasons, that we need to look toward those Second Amendment remedies. The teabaggers threatening violence if they lost the election? Well, we on the left lost the election. Perhaps it is time now to start agitating. Joe. Yeah, I'm about fed up with it, too. I think a lot of people on the so-called left are fed up with it. You know, I've watched some of this discussion about what this crazed bastard Alan Simpson and the dork, who's the other guy, Bowles, is it Chester Bowles or something? Who's the other guy? The one that used to be Clinton's chief of staff. What a gruesome twosome. You talk about an odd couple. Armistead Bowles. Well, what the hell's his name? Rupert Bowles. I don't know either. But Alan Simpson is certifiably nuts. He really is. I mean, this guy is just, he looks like he belongs on the Addams Family, somewhere tucked up in one of those gables up there. That's what Alan Simpson looks like. But in listening to our crack media, or our media on crack in this country, having their discussions on these television talk shows like Morning Joe and the rest of these programs, Chris Matthews, who's the guy on MSNBC in the afternoon? What's his name? Duple Mackelman? What the hell is his name? I can't think of these guys' names. I don't watch it that much. Erskine Bowles. Thank you, Michael. Erskine. That's right. Why no discussion? No discussion of the destruction caused by predatory capitalism that got us here. I mean, goddamn, nobody wants to talk about the truth. Was it liberalism that got us here? Oh, yeah, right. It was the liberals that did it. The liberals took us into two wars. The liberals destroyed the national debt. You know, up until I think I got the statistic right, up until Ronald Reagan's presidency, the history of the entire world, the history of the United States, up until Ronald Reagan, it took that long to develop a national debt of $1 trillion. When Reagan left office, it was $4 trillion. Son of a bitch, does nobody in this country ever have the decency to talk the truth? Huh? No, they don't. So the predations of capitalism, all of it, what Wall Street or the banksters or the insurance industry, what they have done to this country is absolutely destroy it. And you dumbass right-wingers want to believe it was Acorn? Are you really that stupid? Yes, you are that stupid. But no discussion whatsoever by any of these talking heads on television about the predatory nature of capitalism that has put us right here on the edge of the abyss. And I think we ought to kick the country over. And maybe when we come out of it, if we come out of it, we can have the common sense to come up with social democracy. I say that for you teabag freaks. What I mean is democratic socialism.
Never thought I'd live to learn to love the cold air. Never thought I'd pray to hear those temples roar. But God, I wish the grass would turn to money. And then them green bags would fill my pockets.
Ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. Don't forget, tomorrow night, Brad Friedman will be filling in. Bless his heart. And he always has a good show. Every time Brad Friedman fills in, I feel like I've got to come back here and do good talk radio for a change. So tune in tomorrow night. Listen to Brad. That's A. B. If you go to MikeMalloy.com, we have a up on the tab bar. There's a new tab up there. It says sponsor. Click on it, and there's something there you might want to do. Regarding Veterans Day being Furniture Day, Prairie 2 writes, the furniture that goes on sale for Veterans Day is now all made in China. The veterans are all out of work. So the furniture sales should be labeled Veterans of the Army of the People's Republic of China Sales Day. You can buy American-made furniture if you go directly to an Amish workshop Of course, the Amish are all pacifists and aren't veterans. Yeah, I've been saying that for so damn long about how Veterans Day has been, you know, there is nothing capitalist America or corporate America won't turn into some way to make money. Do you remember Jessica Mitford's book? I read it 1,000 years ago, The American Way of Death. And it was written back in the 60s, I guess. The American Way of Death. It's all about the funeral industry. And the rituals and the ridiculousness that we get involved in the disposal of our dead in this crazed consumerist capitalist society. There is a movement now, and it's being fueled by younger people to go back to cremation, which Kathy and I both have in our final directives. Cremation, because I think cremation is $750. Plus you get the urn and a discount gasoline card that comes with it. But there's nothing that capitalism won't try to pimp. And the way capitalism and corporate America and the cowards that run everything, the corporatists, the Republicans, the right-wingers, most of whom, 99% of whom, have never served a day in their lives doing anything, much less going into the military. And the audacity of these cowardly thugs to continue to promote a foreign policy and a domestic policy that practically demands that other people go die for their business bottom line. I mean, why is this still going on? 230 some years into the existence of this country. Why is this still going on? Why? You know the answer. The answer is because we have never, we Americans, we decent people, we believers in truth and justice and honor and dignity of human life, we have never said to the power structure, that's enough. That's enough. We have the potential to do that. We have the potential to do it in a number of different ways. The potential is always there. We have the potential to do it in a pacifist way and the potential to do it other ways, not so pacifist. But you see, we have a whole subset of citizens in this country, and damn them, mostly white, about 80% male, maybe 20% female, who fancy themselves to be some kind of cowboy patriots. They don't like Negroes, they don't like Jews, they don't like gays, they don't like anybody except the people who look and think like them, which is to say like cockroaches. And for some reason, we have allowed these scum to run the country. And what happened on November 2nd, Election Day, I mean, it's astonishing. It's astonishing. Decent people have checked out. Decent people have said, nah, screw this. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not voting for these swine anymore. I don't care who the swine are. They're all swine. I'm not doing it. And as a result, just remember, that's okay. That's okay. I did vote, which seems pretty hypocritical because, you know, I've often said on this program, what the hell's the difference? Especially here in Georgia, where we have Diebold machines. I mean, it's just a goddamn joke. It is a joke. But why have we allowed it to be a joke? Why have we allowed, and this is a question I ask myself every day, at least once, why have I allowed the very essential system of democracy, voting, not voting, counting the votes. Why have I allowed that to be turned over to a capitalist organization called Diebold or ISS or ESS all these companies now that handle on a on a private enterprise capitalist basis the essential element of democracy, voting, counting the votes, not voting, counting the votes. Nobody can force you to go vote, but once you vote, they can decide who's going to win and who's going to lose. Why have we allowed that? Why do we continue to send people to go die for capitalism? And then call them heroes when they come home. Are they heroes because they go die for capitalist pigs who use and abuse the whole idea of patriotism? Are they? Stick around. We'll be back. It is 7 past the hour. I don't know how often you go to Huffington Post. I go there quite a bit. I think it's a good website. It's getting better. So I went there today, and I see this. White House gives in on Bush tax cuts. Now, the other day I saw something that said John Boehner says no compromise on the Bush tax cuts. This is written by Sam Stein and Howard Feynman. President Barack Obama's top advisor suggested to the Huffington Post late yesterday that this administration is ready to accept an across-the-board temporary continuation of steep Bush-era tax cuts, including those for the wealthiest taxpayers. David Axelrod, the president's advisor, said that appears to be the only way that middle-class taxpayers can keep their tax cuts, given the legislative and political realities facing Obama in the aftermath of last week's electoral defeat. Axelrod said during an unusually candid 90-minute interview in his office, quote, "We have to deal with the world as we find it, the world of what it takes to get this done. There are concerns," he added, "the Congress will continue to kick the can down the road in the future by passing temporary extensions for the wealthy time and time again. But," he said, "I don't want to trade away any security for the middle class in order to make that point." Well, okay. And the bankruptcy continues. You know, it's just a joke on the entire country. These filthy Republicans and these cowardly Democrats. I hate Republicans because they're cowards and liars. I hate Democrats because they're cowards and have absolutely no sense of morality or justice. They are completely, or ethics, they've completely sold out to the pimps and bastards that make up Republicans. (sighs) As Feynman and Sam Stein wrote, time is not on the administration's side. All of the tax cuts enacted in 2001 and 2003 will expire at the end of this year unless Congress acts. The Republicans, in effect, Axelrod said, built in tax increases. And separating different categories of tax cuts now, extending some without extending others, is politically unrealistic and procedurally difficult, Axelrod added. He went on to say, we don't want that tax increase to go forward for the middle class, but plainly what we can't do is permanently extend these high income taxes. In other words, the White House won't risk being blamed for raising taxes on the middle class, even though arguably it is the Republicans' refusal to separate the categories that has put Obama in this bind. The only condition seems to be that the tax cuts for the wealthy will not be extended permanently. Oh, please. A student of history and a one-time political reporter, Axelrod expressed curiosity and even some optimism about the Tea Party, suggesting that Obama could work with them on matters such as a ban on spending earmarks and on winding down the war in Afghanistan. If so, Feynman writes, if so, Obama would turn the Clinton-era triangulation strategy on its head, reaching out not to the moderates in the other party, but to this new breed of conservatives who could bring the ideological arc of Congress full circle. Can the White House work with them? Axelrod said, quote, it is a fascinating time in our history, and I don't think anybody really knows. I mean, I've watched carefully some of these folks on television. I don't think this is nearly as predictable as people think, end quote. President Obama, in fact, according to Feynman, has called every new Republican senator-elect and many of the incoming Republican House members. Well over 100 calls in all, said Axelrod. That's how a shellacked president spends his plane time on a trip to Asia. You see, I'm sure you do. The thing about capitalism, it is A, unrelenting, and it will not compromise. It will come into your country. It will kill your people, your babies, your children. It will destroy your cultural traditions. It will take over your natural resources. When it's done doing that, it'll come back home. Capitalism will. It will export the jobs back here. It will turn the working class in this country that liberals, only liberals, built the middle class. Conservatives have never done a goddamn thing. Nothing. To build the middle class. It's always been liberals. Capitalism comes back home and continues its ripping and tearing, its violations, its predatory nature, so that always, always and forever, the top 1 or 2% will be the ones that make the money, the ones that have a decent life. And I can't get my mind around the fact that we Americans allow this to happen. 98% of the country is not included in all this good stuff. And of that 98%, it's my understanding that 60 or 70% are now Republican or conservative. What is wrong with you dumbasses? What is wrong with you? Why do you find it comfortable, you right-wingers, you Republicans? You teabag freaks. Why do you find it comfortable to condemn yourself and your children and your grandchildren to a threadbare existence? Why do you do that? Why is that good for you? When the teabag, not the teabag, but the capitalist top 2 or 3% will continue to gouge out your goddamn heart, your children's heart. You're not going to be able to educate your kids. You're not going to be able to travel. You're not going to be able to do a damn thing. Why? Why do you people, you conservatives, not understand your own history? Every single thing that's ever been done to build a middle class has been done by liberals. Everything. Everything from the GI Bill to women's right to vote, to equal pay, to FHA loans, to FDIC to guarantee your money in a bank. Everything has been done by liberals. Everything. Every single thing. Now, I can sit here all night and call you dumb bastards, which you are, but I don't understand why you won't take the time to understand your own history, the history of this country, what liberals have done, what Democrats, what liberals have done to give you a decent life. And now you're just pissing all over it? What is your objective? Is it to demolish the black man in the White House? That's it, isn't it? You racist thugs. That's what it is. None of you, not one of you, on television, on talk shows, on this program, not one of you has ever coherently stated what it is that you are promoting and your ilk are promoting that is good for this country. Not once. All you miserable, whiny bastards have said, oh, tax cuts, tax, it's my money, tax cuts. Now I don't like the black guy in the White House. Why don't you be honest? No. You can't. Well, if you think you 60% of the 98%, if you think that this destruction's not going to touch you and whip your ass into bloody tatters, I hope I can be around to hear your screams.
The quality of mercy is not
victims and heroes.
The quality of mercy is not
murderers and martyrs. The quality of mercy is not surrender.
Now a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
A couple of emails from veterans here. The amazing thing to me is that after more than 60 years of outright lies, subterfuge, and backroom deals that have put the Treasury in near default and spilled the blood of millions worldwide, the public still accepts what the government says and responds to the call to sacrifice in the name of defense. And because of the most cynical manipulation of the concept of patriotism, while the true reasons for and the nature of war is hidden by secrecy. If the public knew even half of what their government has done in their names, or what has been kept from them by the massive machinery of the national security state, they'd hang them all and not give it a second thought. Said as a veteran who used my GI Bill to educate myself about our true nature. Smedley Butler was right. Michael and Roswell. And then this from Ron in PA. A tri-folded flag, 21 guns, a few medals for 23 years. Mike, my 8-year-old's school wanted vets to show up today for the students to talk about their military experience. A friend of mine, who is also a veteran and whose son goes to the same school, said they asked him to come too a couple of times. He said that they must have been hard-pressed to get people to show up. Can't get them to wave the flag, it seems, once the red stripes turn into bloody bandages. Anyway, my wife, despite the protestations of my son, said no about my showing up. She knows me all too well. So I guess the schools are doing their job mentally preparing our children to be cannon fodder. Makes me proud to be an American. Yeah, buddy. This friend of mine also lamented how our kids are indoctrinated to see war as this manly thing, where they get all hopped up on first-person shooter games and are conditioned to operate under the illusion that they will somehow be spared death if they land in a firefight. But a bullet has no conscience. A bullet has no consciousness, even as, quote, the girls love to see you shoot, end quote, right? Last, when I think of Veterans Day, I think of my cousin Donnie Bailey. I was 13 when he came home paralyzed from the neck down. He was shot by a sniper while he was at Gwangnam Province. He was 23. I began puberty watching my cousin suffer for a little less than a year before he finally decided to stop. The VA had given him a motorized wheelchair with mouth control to get around. That helped some, but for the most part, he was bedridden. That's what I think about during Veterans Day. And all the fake patriotic BS just pisses me off. Because I can't help but feel he died for no damn reason, especially since we now know the Gulf of Tonkin incident was a hoax. And then Ron sends me the personal military and casualty data for Ronald Gerald Bailey, his cousin. Date of birth, USMC. Grade when he was shot, E4, rank corporal, rifleman, L Company, 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines, 1st Marine Division. Started his tour June 16, 1969. He was shot August 28, 1969. He died January 11, 1972. Age at loss, 23. On the wall, panel O2W, line 103. Does anybody remember why we were in Vietnam? Do you know how many American corporations now have factories in Vietnam? Especially clothing companies. You probably have something in your closet right now. If you bought anything in the past 2 years, you probably have something in your closet made in Vietnam. Does that mean anything to you? We'll be right back.
And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles from the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain.
Gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, the Obama administration has decided to According to McClatchy newspapers, the McClatchy Washington Bureau, Obama has decided to begin publicly walking away from what it once touted as a key deadline in the war in Afghanistan. This in an effort to de-emphasize Obama's pledge that he would begin withdrawing U.S. forces in July of next year, 2011. This is according to administration and military officials who have spoken with McClatchy off the record and anonymously. The new policy, according to McClatchy newspapers, the new policy will be on display next week during a conference of NATO countries in Lisbon, Portugal, where the administration hopes to introduce a timeline that calls for the withdrawal of U.S. and NATO forces from Afghanistan by 2014. That's the year when Afghan President Hamid Karzai once said Afghan troops could provide their own security. This is according to three senior Obama administration officials. And military officials who all told the same thing to McClatchy, along with others speaking anonymously as a matter of policy. The Pentagon also has decided not to announce specific dates for handing security responsibility for several Afghan provinces to local officials. And the Pentagon instead intends to work out a more vague definition of transition when it meets with its NATO allies. What a year ago had been touted as an extensive December review of the strategy now also will be less expansive and will offer no major changes in strategy, according to these officials. So far, the U.S. Central Command, the military division that oversees Afghanistan operations, has not submitted any kind of withdrawal order for forces for the July deadline, two of those officials told McClatchy. Who's running the country? We live in a national security state, Truth Seeker. We are manipulated by, on the one hand, the capitalists who don't care what happens to this country as long as they make their money. On the other hand, the very clack of murderous bastards that Eisenhower warned us about. The military-industrial complex. Only that has morphed into the national security state. What Eisenhower referred to as the military-industrial complex is a term that sounds very quaint to these parasites, these murderers. It's now the national security state. That's where you live, by the way. That's where I live. The shift in this deception, as according to McClatchy, has begun privately. And it came in part because U.S. officials realized the conditions in Afghanistan were unlikely to allow a speedy withdrawal. What does that mean? Huh? Anybody who wants to bug out can bug out. Further into this report from McClatchy, it says, last week's midterm elections also have eased pressure on the Obama administration to begin an early withdrawal. You see, earlier this year, some Democrats in Congress pressed to cut off funding for Afghanistan operations. Ooh, bad Democrats. Bad, 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 bad. But with Republicans in control of the House of Representatives beginning in January, there'll be less push for a withdrawal or for a drawdown. No, good Republicans. Good, 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 good. The incoming House Armed Services Chairman, Representative Howard Buck McCowan of Republican in California, told Reuters news agency last week that he opposed setting the date. The White House vehemently denies that there is any change in policy. But Tommy Vitor, who in the hell is he? A White House spokesman said, quote, the president has been crystal clear that we will begin drawing down troops in July of 2011. There's absolutely no change to that policy. Now get out of here. Well, we'll soon see, won't we? So, tax cuts for the rich will continue indefinitely, which means the national debt will go up by another $700 billion. almost $1 trillion. That's just for openers. Which means more control of our economy, our monetary system by the Chinese, which means a further weakening of the United States. But the Republicans are happy as pigs in slop, aren't they? Aren't these Republicans the people who voted these monsters into office? Aren't you all just happy as hell? Huh? Why don't you send me an email if you can get someone to type it for you or put the sentences together and tell me what good you think is to come from your vote and millions like you? Huh? What good thing is going to happen now? Well, we're going to get rid of that debt. We're in debt. Tom in Joshua Tree, California writes, Mike, I share in your stunned sense of disbelief when it comes to figuring out the heartless and mindless will of a defunct people living in a defunct society. Are the Democrats really saying that it's okay to let the rich off in order to secure the tax relief of the middle class and the poor? It is insanity on such a massive scale of impossible ignorance and lies that it defies credibility. Before Reagan, corporate taxes paid for 40% of the government. Now it pays 6%. To keep the taxes down on the super rich is to raise taxes on everyone else because it takes more personal money to survive. Education, health, the added steps needed to breathe clean air or drink clean water, the price of all the wars and occupation, the price of fuel, heat, energy, food, the security state, all this cost is passed on to the taxpayer, not in taxes, but in the cost of living. $3 a gallon for gas seriously impacts a working family, but means nothing to the rich. While the poor pinch pennies, the rich pinch the poor. And unfortunately, the poor beg for more. What's even worth saving in a society that seeks out slavery? Well, actually, Tom, I know your question was rhetorical, but the answer is nothing. There's nothing worth saving in that kind of a society. Absolutely nothing. And nobody is working to save this society. Nobody. A few people talking about this catastrophe, this crisis. But most of us who are talking about it are utterly and absolutely powerless. Really, we really, really are. From the Oracle. No, not that Oracle. I've heard that Representative Issa, Republican of California, is going to conduct nonstop investigations into President Obama starting in January in an attempt by culture of corruption Republicans to derail Obama's chances of winning a second four-year term as president. If Representative Issa and Republicans pull the stunt, President Obama should tell Republicans that he will instruct Attorney General Eric Holder to call for federal grand juries to uncover all the high crimes and misdemeanors committed by his Republican predecessors, George Bush and Dick Cheney. Prosecuting and convicting them were required by federal law and the U.S. Constitution. Also, he can threaten Republicans with finally releasing the CIA's after-incident damage assessment report that was necessary after covert CIA agent Valerie Plame top-secret cover was blown. Yes, there was definitely a CIA investigation done into what damage was done to our national security. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah. This is some website, the Oracle. So what this person is suggesting, I'm sure he's suggesting it in good faith, that Obama should try a tit-for-tat thing with the Republicans. If you investigate me, I'm going to turn loose my attorney general. The Oracle apparently doesn't understand that this administration and Eric Holder and Barack Obama are no more interested in punishing anybody for anything than they are interested in pissing up a rope. They're just not going to do it. Well, who is this Oracle person? obviously a blogger someplace, I guess, who thinks of himself as a progressive or a liberal. And I'm not busting up on the Oracle based on how he considers himself. I find it absolutely mind scrambling, though, that anybody anywhere on any blog left on the web can write that Obama should stand up to the Republicans when all Obama does is fold and fold and fold. You know, it's one thing to fold to your superiors, but to fold to a room full of cockroaches is beyond comprehension to me. Just beyond comprehension.
Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
10 before the hour. Stick around after the break at the top of the hour. I'm going to baptize Sarah Palin. And I want all of you you right-wing bloggers who capture so much of my stuff and then put it out there for consumption by your brain dead. Keep doing that. Oh my God, please keep doing that. Because if I just, and I know this will happen, convert one or two of these poor misbegotten, misguided freaks, it'll all be worth it. So get your little recording devices ready and your digital things, because coming up next hour, Sarah Palin will be closely examined. I'm going to examine her closer than her gynecologist does. Next hour. So stick around for that. Regarding Shimkus, he's the congressman from Illinois, who said that global warming is a hoax, and he's going to make sure that nobody falls for that crap, because God told Noah in the book, book of Genesis that he, God, would never destroy the earth with floods. Regarding that, DVD writes, Mike, I listened to last night's broadcast and was very entertained as usual. I wanted to let you know that John Shimkus's opposition to cap and trade, or whatever these right-wing idiots call it, is just as likely motivated by the fact that his district is home to a large U.S. Steel Corporation facility. And it is motivated by his alleged faith in God's promise to Noah to never again savage the planet with divine wrath. His district is also home to Olin Brass, a manufacturer of ammunition. ConAgra and Archer Daniels Midland also have facilities in his neck of the woods. It's no surprise that he rejects any legislation that would place additional tax burdens on his corporate butt buddies. It's amusing, though, that he resorts to that religious conviction nonsense. His neck of the woods is basically suburban St. Louis on the Illinois side of the river. Not at all an area where a politician has to be a Jesus freak to get elected. Who knows? Maybe he's just an incorrigible a-hole like the rest of those right-wing retards he no doubt plays golf with whenever he gets a chance. And by the way, when do we get to start cracking some skulls? Just kidding. DVD. Well, I'm afraid that that's a good possibility that at some point skull cracking might be necessary, you know, to survive, to eat. I'm talking about skull cracking of animals that you go out and shoot in the forest, right? Representative Peter King, another Republican freak from New York, the man who is likely to become next chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, recently defended former President George Bush's admission in his book that he authorized torture. King said yesterday, referring to the torture of alleged 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, quote, "There was no harm done in the big picture. To hold someone's head underwater, the chance of permanent damage is minimal and the rewards are great." End quote. That's a quote from a member of Congress who's going to head the House Homeland Security Committee. No harm done in the big picture to hold someone's head underwater. See, this stupid son of a bitch, this Peter King, apparently, he's another one. None of these right-wingers understand any history of the United States or our involvement in other countries. We hanged members of the Japanese, not the high command, but below the high command. We hanged some of their middle commanders after World War II and the trials in Tokyo. We hanged them for using controlled drowning, which these dumb bastards refer to as waterboarding. We hanged them. Either we should freely and openly admit that we're hypocrites, or we should hang George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and John Yoo and Bybee, the guy who's now a federal judge. Jesus Christ. And Alberto Gonzalez, to not hang them by their necks until dead is to declare that this country committed some kind of unnecessary murder against Japanese officers when we held them responsible for what Bush now claims he authorized, and Cheney went out of his way to go watch. And Bybee and you and Gonzalez and the rest of these bastards wrote the get-out-of-jail-free pass, or so they think they did, for these war criminals. It's amazing. We have war criminals running the country. I'm not talking about Obama. Jesus, God. I'm talking about where the real power is. War criminals. According to what I'm reading here, I don't know where I got it. There has been a fair amount of buzz from both sides of the aisle lately about potentially seeking legal avenues to investigate the Bush administration's green lighting of the controversial practice. Representative Jason Chaffetz, a Republican in Utah, suggested Tuesday that he might even be open to efforts to probe the prior sanctioning of torture. Ooh, really? Representative Gerald Nadler, Democrat in New York, on Tuesday called more directly for investigations to pursue, quote, full accountability for the criminal use of torture, end quote. Representative Peter King, however, entirely disagreed with this mission. King told Politico, that's where I got this quote, "Jerry and I are friends, but he's entirely wrong on this. There would have been lives lost, and Bush deserves credit for what he did," end quote. And not just credit. Peter King says the former commander-in-chief, George Bush, should get a medal. Happy furniture sale day. We'll be back after the break at the top of the hour. Stay with us, if you dare. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. Hour three of the program tonight. You know, a couple of weeks ago, before the transition of power from the weak to the insane in this country, I went down a list of what the Republicans say they're going to cut on a federal level. The list was pretty extensive, and it covers an awful lot of social services that we in this country spent 80 years building into place. And since 1980, the Republicans have spent 30 years slowly but surely destroying. Because after all, if, you know, if their God wanted you to have health care or have clean food or clean water or clean air, he would have murdered all the Republicans. So there's your proof. But as the New York Times pointed out this morning, the real focus now shifts also to state budgets. The Republicans gained, I don't know if you're aware of this, maybe you've heard about it already, the Republicans gained more than about 700 seats in state legislatures, which leaves Republicans in firmer control in terms of the numbers in state legislatures in more than 80 years. You have to go back before the Depression. And that should give you a clue as to when the last time the Republicans held this kind of power. Can you believe this? Okay, that's apparently that's what Americans want. Setting aside the possibility of and the probability of stolen elections, America has decided that it wants to be led by Republicans. Now, most of these governorships are like 4 years, so this is a long-term deal. Republicans in the Times this morning was talking about how Republicans who've taken over their state capitals are promising to respond to the state budget deficits. Here in Georgia, it's just unbelievable. During the Clinton years, the state took off like a rocket, which is pretty unusual for Atlanta. I mean, for Georgia, with the exception of Atlanta. Atlanta has always been a bustling city, but now, of course, Atlanta is suffering higher unemployment than the rest of the state. But anyway, during the Clinton years, like him or hate him, it doesn't make any difference. What was unemployment back then? 3.5%, 4%, 4.5%? Everybody had a job who wanted one. States were awash in tax revenue, and all sorts of plans were laid. But the Republicans saw this and said, hey, well, let's screw this up real quick, because if we don't screw it up, it's going to put money in the state coffers for, you know, Medicaid and nutrition programs for old people and children. We don't want that. That's socialism. So let's burst this bubble as quickly as we can. And they did. With these Bush tax cuts that filtered all the way down to the states, they absolutely did. That was the whole purpose. The purpose of the Bush tax cuts was to demolish the social safety net in this country. A side effect or an unintended or maybe intended in the long run benefit was to make the top one half of 1% absolutely just rich beyond imagination, and the rest of us can go screw ourselves. So it was a double-pronged stab to the heart, the Bush tax cuts that filtered all the way down the state. So here we are now in 2010, almost 2011. All the Republicans are ready to take over the House and effectively take over the Senate. They had control of the Senate during the last session because the Democrats are too goddamn cowardly to do anything. So now that the Republicans have gained another six seats, the Democrats might as well go home. You sleazy, sleazy bastards, go home. You cowards, go on home. Leave it. Just give it to the Republicans. You gave it to them last time. Go home. You crybabies, get out of town, Democrats. You don't have the courage God gave a pissant, so you might as well leave. But I digress. I'm getting angry again. Don't want to do that. So what's going to happen on the states? Among the proposals that these "I'll never raise your taxes" Republican governors and legislators have come up with, public workers benefits in Wisconsin. Wisconsin did a complete flip. Wisconsin. Unbelievable. It's a Republican state. Wisconsin. Okay, fine. Public workers benefits are going to be slashed. Social services in Maine are going to be pretty much ended. State liquor stores in Pennsylvania are going to be sold off to private enterprise, which I think is a good idea. The state of Pennsylvania never should have been in the drug pushing business to begin with, but they have been since I've been aware of Pennsylvania. I can remember a couple of times when I spent time there. Wanted to go buy a bottle of booze and get, filthy drunk, you have to go to a state-controlled liquor store. Now, the state of Pennsylvania is going to make it easier for people to get drunk and have car crashes and auto wrecks and death and destruction and limbs sheared off and, you know, the all those wonderful things that alcohol can do for you. But in that process of just turning the state liquor stores over to private enterprise, thousands of people are going to be unemployed in Pennsylvania just from that move. I mean, literally thousands. Maybe as many as 18,000, maybe higher. I'm not sure the latest figures on how many people work for the what they call ABC in PA, the Alcohol Beverage Control Commission. At least that's what they used to call it, ABCC. That's where you had to go to get your booze. Now, the billions of dollars in stimulus money that Obama released, of course, it was about a tenth of what was needed. That's drying up. And besides, the teabaggers and Republicans hated that, even though they all were happy to spend it. This is where the hypocrisy comes in. Well, hypocrisy is always there with Republicans. Republicans eat hypocrisy. They are awash in it. It leaks out of their pores. Every single one of them. Every one of them is a liar and a hypocrite. But the new Republican state leaders took a possibility of tax increases off the table in their campaigns, right? So the only way they're going to balance the sacred budget, that has become, this is like back, Mayan times, and they used to sacrifice young people, take them up to the top of the temple. Or was that the Aztec, Olmec, whatever? And while they were still alive, just reach into with a very sharp instrument, cut through their heart, or cut through their skin and bones, and rip out their heart. That was the sacrifice. Other societies at other times have sacrificed virgin girls and virgin boys and babies and, you know, all kinds of sacrifices. All three religions, all three people of the book, was founded by a man who was willing to murder his own baby in order to satisfy this psychotic, vicious, drooling, blood-drenched God of his. But Abraham, when he was told to bring his child up on the, you know, that story. And out of that came three religions. Woohoo! Well, the religion now is becoming very, very secular, and it has come down to the states. So Republican state leaders, since they've taken even the possibility of tax increases off the table in their campaigns, deep cuts in state spending is going to be the rule of the land. That is the new. I'm looking for a new prophet to arise from this, the way Abraham arose from almost murdering his own child to this blood-soaked, ridiculous God of his. More on this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
It boils with every poison you can think of. Thank you.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Yeah, you are. 21 past the hour. Okay, so the Republicans have taken over all these state houses and state legislatures, more so than anything in the past 80 years. The day of the locust is upon us. Oh, my goodness. So how to balance these state budgets? The new sheriff in town, the teabagging Republican, is going to slash everything on the federal level. What about on the state levels? Well, according to Brian Bosma, a Republican who will soon become the Speaker of the Indiana House, and he'll stand alongside a Republican governor, Mitch Daniels, and a supermajority Republicans in the state Senate, he says, quote, "We're going to do what families and businesses all over this country have already had to do, and that is live within their means," end quote. What? When did that happen, Brian? During the Bush years. Do you remember, Brian, when we were attacked in this country in a plot engineered, more or less, by the Bush crime family? And what were we told to do the next day? Go shopping? By our exalted psychotic leader? America living within its means? American family, are you out of your goddamn mind? Are you not familiar with massive credit card debt? Are you not aware, Brian, that there is a huge mortgage meltdown because people have never lived within their means? Have you? Are you debt-free, Brian? You phony bastard. No, you're not. But that's what you right-wing neo-fascists say all the time.
Well, we got to make the country do what the average family does, live within its means.
Ah, anyway, I digress. Brian says, the soon-to-be Speaker of the Indiana House, Brian says, we're going to do what is right, and we'll let the politics land where they may, end quote. What he means is that state services, human services, community health, education, welfare programs, nutrition programs for kids, medical services for kids, for the aged, feeding programs, all that stuff is going to be slashed, right, Brian? And then won't you feel good, you self-satisfied punk? Won't you feel good, huh? Well, you know, we're going to do it, what has to be done, what is right, and we'll let the politics land where they may. You disgusting prick. Republicans have gained such control that when they take office in the coming months, it'll be much easier this time to carry out whatever agenda they choose. Now, that doesn't just mean changing state policies on taxing and spending. It also means loosening regulations facing businesses. That's code for environmental protection laws on a state level. Forget that! Rat feces in your peanut butter? Well, of course! That's the Republican America! Health and Human Services, restrictions on whether or not people are getting poison medication. Well, we're going to end that. We're going to be business friendly now. Trying to cut down on polluted rivers and streams inside the boundaries of a state. Ha, ha, ha. It'll clean itself. Besides, you know, that stuff flows downhill. It'll wind up somewhere else. Ha, ha, ha. Ooh. Not just that, but abortion rights, legal services for undocumented workers in this country who get snagged into the illegal immigration net. Legal services, legal aid. You remember legal aid? Huh? Kiss it goodbye. Poor people don't deserve legal representation, according to Republicans. If they need legal representation, they can get the money together, or they can be rich and avoid the law, evade the law, work through the law, hire someone to show them the wormholes to get them past all the restrictions, right? Oh, and the Obama administration's attempt at health insurance overhaul? Kiss that goodbye.
What? You think that we're really going to allow your little curtain climber to have medical care because he was born with spina bifida? You want us to make the insurance companies pay for your misbegotten little lump of human protoplasm? Oh, no. If you can't buy insurance for your little spina bifida creep, well, I don't know. Put him to work in a circus.
We'll be right back.
Heaven's lonely shore. Sometimes I think that all I hear is pain and misery. Broken homes and love's all gone, and everyone's for me. Children crying, people dying, no one seems to care. This old closing in, there's no hope anywhere. I'll never sing a sad song again, 'cause I'll be gone to heaven's golden shore.
Are you a woman?
He's your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So, how are the Republicans who caused, without question, every single financial meltdown we have ever had in this country since this country was not even this country? And now Americans, so brain dead, have decided, hey, let's do it again. Put them back in office. All right. While most of you were focused on, as Karl Rove wanted you to be, on what was going to happen on a federal level, on a state level, the fire next time, booby. Seriously. So what's going to happen? The let me repeat, Republicans gained more than, well, close to 700 seats in state legislatures, and they now have numbers last seen more than 80 years ago when the last great big Republican fart occurred in this country, and it was the Depression. At least five more governor seats, and perhaps more significantly, across-the-board power in legislatures and governor's offices in at least 20 states. Now, that's more than twice as many before the election. Included in that group are Maine and Wisconsin, which the day before the election had been entirely in Democratic hands. Wisconsin. Scott Walker, who's the governor-elect of Wisconsin, which experienced the largest flip in power in memory, according to the New York Times. Scott Walker says it's kind of put up or shut up time. He says he intends to navigate a projected $3 billion budget gap with no tax increases. He also said he's going to remove, his words, all litigation, regulation, and what he calls excessive cost barriers to businesses. No regulations to businesses. Oh, I want to come to Wisconsin and move into downtown Milwaukee and open up a rat poison factory. And I will flush the chemicals I don't use to make rat poison into the city sewer system. Okay? What? There's a regulation against that. Come on, Scott Walker. Get rid of it. I want to open my rat poison business in downtown Milwaukee. I will hire 150 people every 6 months because that's the longest they live. And I want to open a nuclear power plant in downtown Madison. Jesus God. Scott Walker is going to remove all litigation, regulation, and excessive cost barriers to businesses. On election night, he declared Wisconsin open for business. That means open for pillage, looting, arson, raping, burning, murder, mayhem, anything in the name of unbridled, unrestricted, predatory capitalism. Wisconsin? Oh, my God. Yes, Mike. Wisconsin. He also said he's going to put an end to the plan for a federally financed rail project between Milwaukee and Madison. Costs too much for the state to operate once it's built. Yeah, damn right. Roads are going to cost too much for the state to operate, too. So are schools. So are bridges, dams, power grids. It's all too expensive. Get rid of it all, Scott. Tell your people. Build fires. Cook on an open fire. God damn it. Be like the pioneers. Go kill something and eat it. Yeah, Scott Walker says it's put up or shut up time. As for public employees, wages and benefits, do. Goodbye. You know, all those people who have been sucking at the public till, goodbye. You have a state job in Wisconsin, look to see your wages cut by half and your benefits to disappear. How dare you work for the state? You're a goddamn communist. Well, Scott Walker's going to take care of that. Pennsylvania, a state not fully controlled by Republicans for the past 8 years. Governor-elect Tom Corbett, space cadet. How many of you remember that? No, you don't. I remember that, but you don't remember that. Oh, my God, that was a great television program. Go on Google, go to videos, and see if you can find Tom Corbett, Space Cadet. See if you can find that, okay? Anyway, Tom Corbett is now the governor-elect of Pennsylvania, and he's got to consider two things, a budget gap that could run as high as $5 billion, and his campaign pledge never to raise taxes. Oh, no. I'll tell you what, Tom Corbett, why don't you make the movies and the concerts and the wrestling matches and the boxing matches and the baseball games all free? No, seriously. Why should there be a price of admission if there's not going to be any taxes? That's the price of admission to living in a democratic society. Taxes. It's what you pay at the door when you go in to marvel at what you're about to experience. But isn't an admission fee a tax? Hey, I want to go to the Phillies game for nothing. That's the Republican idea, isn't it? Well, not that, Mike. That's private enterprise. You know, where a city is taxed beyond its means to build a stadium so that private owners can come in and make a fortune with their sports teams? Oh, never mind. I digress. Tom Corbett. He's going to, what's he going to do? Well, among the steps Republican leaders in Pennsylvania are taking a look at, as I mentioned, privatizing the 600-plus liquor stores that the state runs. That'll bring in $2 billion for state coffers and lay off several thousand workers. Ooh! Well, that's just tough, isn't it? Thought I was going to say the S word, didn't you? Elsewhere in other states, the expectation is to privatize services now carried out by public employees. Like, how about adoption? If you want to adopt a child and you are solid, heterosexual, white family under the age of 45 and have enough money, you can go buy a baby. Well, of course, buy one. There'll be no state agency to handle adoption. Education, you're a school teacher. There's not going to be any state money to pay you, so you can go to work for the nearest church school. Now, you're going to have to forget that degree in biology you had and that degree in anthropology or whatever you had. Forget all that. Your new teaching manual will be the Bible. That's right. It just goes on and on. Troy Newman, who's the leader of Operation Rescue, that's the organization that likes to make sure that women do not have any privacy and because of that lack of privacy, they are prohibited from removing clusters of cells from their bodies that they don't want. Troy Newman said, quote, "I feel like a little boy on Christmas morning. Which package do you open up first?" End quote. Why? Well, he's so happy because now he'll have all these state governors and legislatures to help him put those goddamn women back in their place. What do you mean sexual freedom, bitch? Oh, excuse me. Sorry. For a minute there, I thought I was a Christian. Ooh, that's dangerous. I know. Abortion opponents are considering pressing new regulations in New Mexico, Iowa, Kansas, where Sam Brownback is the Republican governor-elect. Do you know what he wants to do? You know what Sam Brownback wants to do? You have sex. First of all, if you're a woman, you're going to have sex with no birth control. The only birth control, and we're still debating this, is whether or not you can use the rhythm section. We may have people come over there to make sure that you're not screwing anybody when you're not fertile. Okay? We have ways of figuring that out. We're Republicans. You will only screw when you're fertile so that you can get pregnant like you are supposed to, as it says in the Holy Bible. Actually, it's a rhythm method, but you see, I'm from Atlanta, and we have had a band here called the Atlanta Rhythm Section, and it just generated lots of jokes back in the 70s. Never mind. In New Mexico, planned rollback. Republicans won the governorship, made major gains in the House. In New Mexico, a rollback of a 2008 environmental regulation dealing with the handling of waste from oil and gas operations. Oh, my God! Handling waste? When you're drilling for oil and gas, you throw the stuff by the side of the road, for Christ's sake. What do you mean? We're not supposed... We're here to dig out oil and gas. We're not here to clean up. And if it gets in your groundwater, the chemicals and the poisons that we use and the veins of oil and gas that we rupture into, if it gets in your water, well, honey, drink bottled water. What's wrong with you? But don't expect us to clean it up. We're capitalists.
This is my private life. I've got no friends to fear. I've got no problems, no cross to bear. If you can find me, come get me out of here. This is my private place. Everything is neat and clean. This guy, the tins are hidden in the closet. This is my private place. Come get me out of here.
Ten before the hour, we're having fun this hour, taking a look at some of the thrilling things in store for the residents of the various states in the union. All the focus, of course, has been on Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid while the Republicans have taken over. Bless their hearts. So for the people who live in now Republican-dominated states, especially you people who voted for him, ooh, the games are about to begin. Continuing here, in Maine, where, as the Times says, a remarkable political transformation occurred, creating a Republican-controlled capital, an alignment not seen for almost 60 years. The governor-elect there, Paul LePage, also is dealing with about a $1 billion budget shortfall, and he's considering abolishing Maine's Land Use Regulation Commission. Huh? Did you know that when you voted for him? The Land Use Regulation Commission, which means zoning.
Jesus Christ, are you kidding me?
Zoning? Well, that means if a hog rendering plant wants to open up on the outskirts of Augusta, they should be able to. Land use regulation, my Republican ass. Planning and licensing duties go back to the counties. Oh, that's a good idea. In the next election cycle, when the counties are taken over by the Republicans, then land use regulations can go back to the neighborhoods. Huh? Taryn Bragdon, Mr. Paul LePage's co-chair of his transition team, said the new governor is also going to scale back the social safety net. Programs like food stamps. Ha, 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 ha. Are you kidding me? Medicaid. Ha, 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 ha. Cash assistance to poor people. Get out of town. We're going to balance the budget. We're going to maintain the tax cuts for the wealthy. We're going to increase the tax cuts for the wealthy. We're going to come down on you poor and you middle class bastards like you have never experienced, because you have to be gone. The Malthusian principles of population control didn't work. Now we have Republicans. And that will work. In Maine, the state motto is, deary go, deary go, which means in Latin, I lead. And the system of the social safety net in Maine, when it was designed several years ago, was nicknamed deary go, I lead. In an effort to provide, among other things, universal health care coverage for the residents of the state of Maine. The co-chair of the new governor's transition team says, deary go, will soon be deary gone. Oh, that is too witty for words. That's Republican humor. Deary go will be deary gone. Why, of course. Meals for old people. Head Start. Systems to deliver food and nutrition for infants and toddlers with developmental delays or disabilities. Farm worker programs, commodity assistance programs. The WIC nutrition program. For low-income pregnant, breastfeeding, and postpartum women, infants, and children to age 5, goodbye. A hungry child, a starving child, is a child whose focus you can get very quickly and show them the Bible. Departments of community health, like immunization. Immunization? If God doesn't want you to get sick, you won't. Child care assistance for low-income families? Well, Jesus God, they can go hire a babysitter like we rich people do. Community health? Plans to sustain state programs to prevent health care-associated infections? Gone. Supplemental nutrition assistance programs? Gone. Senior community service employment grants. Gone. Retraining programs for people over the age of 55 that the Republicans had driven out of work. Gone. Child care assistance. Child care support services for working families. Child support enforcement services. Hey, all you filthy fathers, who abandoned your kids and you've been paying that $300 a month, guess what? Nobody will be around to make you pay it anymore. Yee-haw! Child abuse reporting agencies, gone. Ways to prevent child abuse, gone. Help in finding families for children in foster care with special needs who are available for adoption, gone. Secret Santa program. Hey, let the Marines do it. God damn it, they got toys for tots. What is this Secret Santa crap? Sounds like a fun time coming, doesn't it, Truth Seeker? Huh? Boy, I'll tell you, America, you have really shot yourself in the middle of the forehead this time. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.